Hello, this is Tamiko Facing, your host of Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color, a podcast dedicated to therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color who are leading and inspiring in their space. The purpose of this podcast is to inspire therapists, particularly therapists of color, by sharing the accomplishments of therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color, as well as to support them in their roles. Today, our guest is the very unique and bold Robin Baker. Look, Forbes knows about her. The OT world should know about her. I'm going to read her bio and then we're going to go right into the interview. Robin F. Baker is an occupational therapist and co-founder of Go Therapy, an organization improving access to quality occupational, physical, and speech therapy services for individuals living with disabilities and chronic health conditions in West Africa. Merging her passion for social impact, global health, and occupational therapy, Robin has organized and participated in healthcare projects in Ghana, Liberia, Haiti, UAE, and Costa Rica. She received professional training at the Johns Hopkins Hospital and Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in intensive care, trauma, and stroke rehab. Robin has spent significant in-country time in Ghana, where she spearheaded the Stroke Community Reintegration Program in collaboration with the Stroke Association and Ministry of Health. Robin was a recipient of the 2017 Maryland Daily Records Very Important Professional, Successful by 40 Award, and was selected as a 2018 Forbes Under 30 Fellow for her work and commitment to global health, disability rights, and rehab. Robin completed a Master's of Science in Occupational Therapy from Howard University and studied kinesiology at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, graduating cum laude. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you so much. I'm so thankful for this opportunity, and thank you so much for your platform giving therapists the colors to be able to have a place where we can tell our stories.
You're welcome. I'm excited to have you here as well. So I read your bio. I didn't know, are you from Greensboro? So you went to University of North Carolina at Greensboro. Are you from North Carolina?
I am. I rep the 252 all day. I'm from Bethel, North Carolina.
I did not know that. So I'm in North Carolina. Wow, that's awesome. So tell me about yourself in your own words. How you became, who is Robin and how did you become interested in OT?
Robin, I will have to say that I am very bold. I'm kind of unpredictable. I kind of just, do my own thing. I don't believe in no. I feel like you could tell me no, not right now, or no, it hasn't been done, but you can't tell me no, I can't do it. And I think that's kind of been my attitude since I was a kid. And I had a lot of problems with my mama because my mama was like, nah, I said no. I'm thankful that they have been able to cultivate that part of me. And I think it's been my secret sauce when it comes to entrepreneurship and leadership, because I am very bold. I'm not scared to take risks. And it's just kind of like, all right, I'm just going to dive in there and I'll figure it out. Once I get in there. It's been helpful. It could sometimes be really stressful, but I would say overall, I'm pretty bold. I've given myself the audacity to live the life that I want to live and do the things that I want to do and not being scared of, what society tells me, what I tell myself, and just not being discouraged that if it hasn't been done before that I can't do it. It's just that it hasn't been done before. Maybe it's just waiting on me to get there, right? So.
Oh, I love it. Now, how did you become interested in occupational therapy?
So when I was at University of North Carolina at Greensboro, UNCG, I knew that I was going to be an athletic trainer. From the time I was 16 and I was going to North Pitt High School in Bethel, I knew that I was going to be an athletic trainer. And it wasn't until my senior year of college, my sophomore year, my mom got diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. But my senior year, she was placed on hospice, and she ended up having a home OT who came in, and the OT was phenomenal. And she started working with my mom on her end of life goals. And my mom's end of life goals was to be able to complete a bedside commode transfer, and to be able to do her grooming activities. And I thought that it was just so intimate and personal that, a therapist will come in and do training for me and my dad to be able to safely transfer my mom to the best I could know, that we would, you know, navigate household businesses. We work on energy conservation strategies. And for my mom, she was like, you know, I don't care if I can't do anything else. I need to be able to make this transfer to the best I can mold, and I need to be able to wash my face and brush my teeth. I don't care if you provide setup assistance. And granted, I didn't know what any of this was before, but she, you know, was very intentional that those two tasks were things that were very meaningful to her, and that she wanted to be able to do them even as she was transitioning on. And so, it was at that time I was like, nah, I can't do athletic training. I went to my advisors and I was like, I know you guys have been prepping me for years that I was going to be an athletic trainer, but I have to change my major. I didn't even have time to change my major because I was graduating. I was like, but I'm going to change my concentration. I'm actually going to start applying to OT schools. And so I end up going to Howard, and you know, that's a story for another day on how I got there. But the story for Howard is that I was bold and that I couldn't take no for an answer. I ended up applying after the deadlines, like a couple of weeks before school started, and kind of showed up like, hey, y'all, you know, there's my acceptance letter. I need financial aid.
I hear you.
My bags from Greensboro. And I showed up and Dr. Banks saw this black face like, sis, what are you doing here? you know, what's going on? And so that's kind of how I got into OT, is really the journey of my mom and being able to see OT firsthand, how intimate, how personal the profession is, how impactful it is to, you know, the patients that we serve as well as their families. And so that occupational therapist definitely changed my life. Like, she really changed my life and my outlook on the work that I wanted to do. And that's how I kind of got into OT.
Wow, that is a great story. And I can feel your energy. Like, we're not together right now, but you are so energetic. I can feel the energy and the passion for the profession. So you get to Howard, you don't take no for an answer. You obviously get into the OT program, you graduate, you become licensed. Let's talk about your entrepreneurial and leadership endeavors. How did you take this leap from being an occupational therapist, you know, as just a clinician, to then becoming an entrepreneur?
I think it really still also goes back to Howard. That place, you know, Howard produces the highest number of therapists of color, specifically OTs. And I think Howard really challenged me. You know, I have to say thank you to, you know, Dr. Banks and Dr. Jackson and Dr. Anderson, because it was my first time being able to see people who look like me tell me that I can actually do the unthinkable, right? They challenged me to just be and do whatever it is that I wanted to do. Granted, they had to put a leash on me sometimes, because sometimes your girl will go wild and I would think that I could do everything. But I think over the course of those 2.5 years, they gave me an opportunity to actually grow and groom my leadership skills. And so I was like, you know, the president of the Howard University Occupational Therapy Association. And through that opportunity, you know, they were like, yeah, we need to send people to conference. And, you know, the presidents before me were, shout out to them too, because they paved the way. they were like doing bake sales and cooking sales. And I was like, look, Dr. Banks, I don't mean no harm, but your girl Robin is not about to be on the corner of Georgia Avenue selling brownies. Like, we're just not going to do that. Like, we're not going to do that. And so I, you know, got on Google and was like, look, there's the Baltimore Ravens around the corner. There's the Washington Redskins. Like, we need to work concessions. Like, we need to be able to just work one part of the year, one semester, and get the money that we needed to be able to go to conference. And so we were able to work it out where we were able to get a contract with the Washington Redskins. So the Washington Redskins, they provided us a booth where we can sell concessions, right? So every game, every home game, Howard University OT students, we were in there on the concession selling hot dogs, beers, whatever. We did whatever we needed to do, and we were able to raise enough money to send almost 25 OTs to conference. And I think for me, it was that experience where I was like, yeah, nah, you can't tell me no. You can't tell me no. You can't tell me no at all. But again, I think it's because I had the support of our professors, as well as, you know, I had amazing classmates who you know, trusted me enough to follow the vision and encouraged me to just keep pushing the envelope, keep trying. And then they also picked me up when I was disappointed and, like, you know, life was hitting me hard. And my nickname for them was, or my nickname that they gave me was Baby Genius. And that's because I came in to grad school. I was 21 and all of them were, you know, like, in their later 20s, like 26, 27, 28, that had work experience. And so it was like, here's this girl who literally, like, she ain't even grown yet, but she's like trying to tell us what to do. And I mean, they just embraced me and they loved on me and they just kind of helped me to cultivate this thing, which has been my secret sauce, which is, you know, just again, having the audacity, being willing to take risks and just thinking outside of the box. And I think that example of the Washington Redskins was just like, all right, yeah, there's a lot of ways that we could raise money to go to conference, but we needed to go to California that year. And I knew that we could not have a bake sale every week to raise the money that we needed, but OTs were problem solvers, right? We're critical thinkers. And I think that I was able to just kind of cultivate those skills in the safety and the love and the encouragement of Howard University. And that's kind of have propelled me beyond Howard to, you know, my professional spaces and now Go Therapy.
So Go Therapy, tell us about Go Therapy. What is the mission of this organization? What do you do? And share with us about Go Therapy.
Yeah, so essentially our goal is just to be able to provide, you know, OT, PT, SLP services to individuals who have chronic conditions. We're more so now kind of shifting to the chronic condition phase, looking at stroke, hypertension, diabetes, and providing them access to rehab services. And we're specifically looking at the continent, right, where we know that illness is universal, but access to quality healthcare services is not. And access to quality rehab services, specifically on the continent, in a lot of places, a lot of communities, is non-existent. And so I'm Liberian American, and you know, one of the things that got me here is that, you know, while we were working on the End of Life Goals with my mom, one of the most interesting and impactful conversations we had was, you know, right before she passed away, she was like, you know, Robin, I'm not going to be able to make it back to Liberia, but I need you to promise me that you will use your education, your skills, your knowledge to be able to impact Liberians as well as fellow West Africans. And this was in 2010. And I was like, yeah, okay, mom, I got you, sis. Don't worry. I don't even know what you're talking about, but I'm going to do it, right? So I just didn't even know what that meant. But I know that it was like something that always played in my mind and that it was a promise that I knew that I needed to keep. And, you know, there's an interesting thing about parents, specifically moms, they have a way of getting you to do what they want you to do in life and in death. In my case, in life and in death, like, my mom is still on me to do what I need to do, right? Yeah. Fulfill my promises. And so I end up going to Costa Rica for a study abroad program at Howard. And that's where I received my aha moment where, like, look, illness is universal. There's people around the world who are having strokes. There are people around the world living with hypertension. There are people around the world who have, you know, cerebral palsy. But again, access to our unique niche services, that's not everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And I felt that, you know, it was a double-edged sword type situation. Like, all right, I could fulfill my promise to my mom. I can travel to the continent and I can make a very sustainable impact all in one. And so this is kind of the basis of Go Therapy, where, you know, our goal is to be able to, you know, create, and we have done a really great job of creating a rehab ecosystem, right? Involving, you know, universities such as Howard University and organizations such as, you know, the Stroke Association of Ghana and the Ministry of Health and all these small private entities, and having a cohort where, you know, therapy services can be nourished and nurtured. So Ghana, there's the graduates, OTs, just graduated in 2016. So they're 3 years old, right? So there's a lot of mentorship that needs to happen. There's, you know, a lot of learning that needs to take place on both sides. And so creating an ecosystem where there could be an exchange of knowledge and education and resources. You know, that was kind of the first goal of Go Therapy. And now that we've done that, now we're saying, all right, now let's look at sustainability. How can we shape the face of occupational therapy on the continent? How can we shape the face of occupational therapy in West Africa? Because how OT looks in West Africa is a little bit different from how it looks in East Africa and a little bit different from how it looks in South Africa. Because West Africa, we've been plagued with, you know, specifically when you look at Liberia, war and Ebola, and there's a lot of infrastructure. Our infrastructure is not as developed, right? So there's a lot of different challenges that we have to be mindful of when we're creating, when we're looking at specifically, you know, the West African market, specifically Ghana, right? So it's been a very interesting journey. And honestly, some days I'm like, how did I even get here? Like, how am I even doing this? I don't understand.
You are doing it and doing it well. Now, is Go Therapy your only business right now? Or what other leadership positions are you involved in?
So yes, I'm also on the board for Howard University Alumni. Howard University OT Alumni Board. For a long time, I was on the DC Occupational Therapy Board before I made the move to Ghana. I'm on the Stroke Association Board in Ghana, as well as an advisor to University of Ghana OT program and their students, as well as their practicing clinician. So kind of taking on all of these different leadership roles within the profession. Yes. But I think at the root of it, I have a heart of service. And so I'm naturally drawn to like social entrepreneurship. So I'm naturally drawn to social impact, whether it's, if it's in education, which I was a facilitator for this wonderful organization called Citizens Initiatives, where we were essentially training Ghanaians to be college graduates or college students, Ghanaians to be thought leaders, to be problem solvers, figuring out how to solve local problems using local solutions. And so it was through that experience where I realized that I just have a heart for service and problem solving, and that you can put me in any sector, like any single sector, and I can make it work. Like I just started working with this lifestyle agency in Ghana, and it's looking at basically like hospitality and concierge services. And I was like, y'all, I'm in healthcare. Like, how am I even going to be able to contribute to this? And again, OTs, we have critical thinking and problem solving skills. So you can drop us anywhere.
Yes.
Any sector. Drop us anywhere and we will be like, oh, okay. You're going to know what OT is after this. You will know who we are after this, right?
Right. Amen. I love that you're saying that, because I think too often the focus is on the medical model and traditional practice, which I think we definitely have a role there. We need to be in those places, but we also have a role in these social environments. And I would love to see that emphasized more. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing. And you're an entrepreneur at your core, because you're, you know, like you said, you'll figure it out and you'll show how OT brings value. And so many times I speak with OTs that sometimes have a hard time articulating our value outside of the medical model. Mm-hmm. Do bring value. Now, do you live in Ghana? Because I know when I first emailed you, you said, hey, I just got back from Ghana. How's your schedule? What does that look like in terms of travel?
So I'm a wanderer right now. Last year, I made the move to Ghana full time.
Okay. And
I got out there and it was a journey. Your girl was not ready. I was not ready. There was just a lot of things that I did not know. And part of the reason for me moving was that I needed to have a really authentic culture experience. There was a lot of things about the culture that I couldn't get from just going to Ghana for 1 month at a time or for a couple of weeks at a time, that I really needed to immerse myself in the Ghanaian culture so that I could understand what it's like to be a stroke survivor in Accra, right? To understand what it's like to be a stroke survivor in Dodoma, understand what it's like to be a stroke survivor in OCM. Like, I needed to be in these spaces and, you know, navigate like a local person would navigate, so that when we're providing, you know, interventions and education, that is coming from a place of knowledge and is not coming from a place of, I'm just making this up, right? Mm-hmm. what I think this is, right? So last year was definitely, and this year has been a journey of, you know, self-discovery and just cultural immersion. And I think I needed it so that our team could be able to really cultivate local solutions for local problems. So when we were creating, you know, some of our programs, specifically our program, the Stroke Community Reintegration Program, which is providing community-based services for stroke survivors in Ghana, you know, we did this in the comfort of our condos. You know, my co-founder is Christopher Gaskins, and he's also a Howard alum OT. And, you know, when we were coming up with this idea, we were like, yeah, the research tells us this, the data says this, but you know, what those research articles and what the data doesn't tell you about is culture. They don't tell you about culture, right? And so culture is something that you need to experience for yourself. And then once you get the culture, you take the data, you take the knowledge, and then you add that to the culture and you're able to come up with a very realistic solution to the problem. And I think the realistic part is what we were missing. We were like, no, but the data says this, you know? Yes. And I'm like, I was telling my co-founder, like, I know what the data says, but bruh, this is not how it happens here. Like, it's not working like this. So yes, you know, in this moment, honestly, you know, special shout out to my co-founder, Christopher Gaskins, for, you know, being my balance and being the person who really I could bounce ideas off and who keeps me grounded when I'm like, look, I don't know why I signed up for it, but, you know, I think, you know, we've done well with Go Therapy. Let's just, you know, let's just table this organization right now and just go on living our life. We'll come back later. So he just keeps me grounded and keeps me honestly working towards the mission at all times, regardless of how hard it gets. So yeah, it's been a journey.
that you know, that's very common with entrepreneurs. I go through it myself, and a lot of entrepreneurs that I work with and do consulting with, you know, you have your days where you're like, you know what, I'm just going to go back and be regular.
Right. You know? Yes.
Like, this is really challenging right now.
Right.
And it does make a difference when you have a partner or a support network, advisory board, someone that you can, you know, talk about those frustrations with and problem solve and go back to that why, back to that mission. Why did you start this in the first place? And that really can help you to, you know, to stay focused. So that's great.
Yes, definitely.
So let's talk about, you talked about culture, which I really appreciate you speaking about, because you're right. You can have all this data, but if you don't really understand the culture, how can you truly be client-centered? Mm-hmm. So our occupational therapy profession has between 4% and 6% persons of color. Has this impacted you as a professional, as an entrepreneur at all? And if so, how?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Like, it's unfortunate that the clientele that we serve look like us, but the therapists do not, right? And so, you know, working specifically in Baltimore when I was at Johns Hopkins, there were only two Black therapists, right? And shout out to Tiffany Colbert, my girl. Like, we were in there, and, you know, anytime it came to, you know, diversity and inclusion and needing to be the face of diversity, we were always in pictures, right? We were always asked to, you know, go and speak about diversity within the profession and how the department was, you know, being really diverse, but in actuality, they weren't, right? And so it's like this thing where we always kind of have to play the mask. We always have to wear the mask and, you know, play this role of, okay, you're the only one in the room. And so you're representing everyone, right? You're representing everyone. Yeah. And there's a burden that comes with that, because it's like, I always have to be 10 times better than, you know, the person beside me. I always have to be, you know, 10 times more hardworking. And, you know, there's a burden to it that I wish that, you know, a lot of people of color, when you talk about these different spaces, you know, even outside of OT, that we didn't have to be bogged down with. There's a burden and there's a responsibility, right? And But the beautiful thing about it is that it's a responsibility, right? And it's a responsibility that I think a lot of us take very seriously. And I think this is why you see a lot of, you know, OTs of color, you know, starting home health practices or starting consultancies or starting, you know, these unique businesses, because we're like, you know, there's not a space for us. There's not a space for us. And so we're going to create our own space. And I mean, being in the DMV area, we're highly concentrated. There's a lot of therapists of color. And so honestly, most of the time I'm working with my classmates and I'm like, oh, hey, y'all, like, you know, you're a very familiar face, but that's not the case everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's a responsibility for all of us that when we get into these spaces that we always pull another person up. And I'll have to say again, speaking to my co-founder, Christopher Gaskins, as well as one of our other good friends, Willie Haynes, that they got into Walter Reed. And when they were leaving, it's always that when one person leaves, we pull a person of color into that space, right? And if that means that I know that I might put my resignation in May, I was starting to recruit therapists of color like in December. I was vetting those people in December because I'm like, you know what? You know, Chris pulled me in. And so now I need to make sure that I pull another person of color into this space, because if we don't do that, we won't have a seat at the table. So look, once you give me a seat at the table, I want you to know that everybody attached to me, someone attached to me is also going to get a seat at that table if I so choose to move. And even if I don't move, I'm going to scoot to the side. I'm going to slide over so that you could get in, right? And so I think that for a lot of us, we're very intentional about paying it forward, that someone came and paved the way for me. And so I'm going to make sure that I paved the way for another person of color to get into these spaces, to get into these rooms, so that we always have a seat at the table, right? So that our needs are always being heard and being met and that we're not an afterthought.
Yeah, I agree. I remember clearly someone in both of the programs that I was in, radiologic science and occupational therapy, I was the only person of color. Radiologic science, it started off with two people of color and one of them dropped out. But I remember clearly a professor, you know, pulling me to the side because I would shrink. I was one of those who would, you know, sometimes shrink. Mm-hmm. And he helped me to not shrink. And he definitely was a person who played it forward. And I likewise do the same. And it sounds like that is what you're doing, as well as the person, you know, like your mentor, supporting each other and understanding that responsibility is not just about you, even mm-hmm. though sometimes that you may feel a burden. We have a responsibility. So what advice would you give to therapists of color who are seeking to go into entrepreneurship and leadership roles?
Oof, y'all sure y'all ready? Are you sure, baby girl? Are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure? you know, I think the greatest advice, and this is advice that I'm just learning now after being on this journey for 3 years, is that you have to be rooted in yourself, right? You have to know who you are. You need to understand who you are as a woman or man of color, understand your strength as well as weaknesses, and be actively working towards improving those things, right? And if you're a person of faith like I am, you know, your girl had to be wrapped in the word. I needed to be covered. I needed to be rooted in my faith. And, you know, understanding that there is, you know, there's a price to be called, right? There's a price mm-hmm. to purpose.
Yes.
And that the price to be called means that you're dying to yourself every day, right? There's mm-hmm. a part of you that dies every day so that your purpose can be fulfilled and that you can walk divinely in what it is your assignment is. And I think for me, it's been just as much as a spiritual journey as it has been a professional and personal journey of growth. I think those things kind of go hand in hand. But understanding who I am as a woman has, you know, been insightful in a way that I know that one of my weaknesses is that I, because I am bold, I feel like I can do everything. Like, you can't tell me no. Like, I can do everything, right? But the actuality is I can't do everything, right? Like, it's impossible for me to do everything. And so because, you know, I am very ambitious, I feel like there's been moments in this journey where my ambition has turned into anxiety, right? So there's a mental health aspect that you have to play on this, where you need to understand, like, you know, what are your triggers? How are you feeling? Like, are you taking inventory of yourself? Have you taken inventory of, you know, what your triggers are? Like, the entrepreneur journey is very lonely, is isolating sometimes, is painful, is filled with disappointment, is like frustrating. And if you're not rooted in who you are and whose you are, so if you're not rooted in yourself, and if you're not a person of faith, if you're not rooting in something that's greater than you, sometimes you can get lost in the sauce, right? And your passion, the thing that you were so passionate about can be the thing that you start to resent. And I feel like I've been in those moments as well, where I'm like, you know what? I don't want to be called. Like, I don't want to feel purpose. Like, I don't want to do this. Like, I just want to go, you know, look, collect my coins and be normal, sit down somewhere, do things that, you know, other 20 year olds are doing. Like, I want to travel and be on Instagram posting pictures. Like, why am I going through this for a cause that's greater than me? But again, there's a price of being called, and you have to understand that you're going to go through some things, and you need to be prepared to deal with the lows just as much as the highs, right? And you need to have a tribe around you who is going to support you regardless, right? And so, you know, I'm very thankful of my tribe who reminds me daily of who I am when I'm filled with doubt and uncertainty, and when I just don't want to do it anymore. They're like, you know what, Robin, we honor your feelings, we understand why you're frustrated, but I mean, let me tell you who Robin F. Baker is. Let me tell you about yourself since you forgot, right? And so, you know, there's a price to be called, and you have to decide, like, are you willing to pay that price? Because it's not always going to be, you know, podcast interviews and articles written about you and your organization. It's not always going to be the highlights that you see on social media. There will be a lot of nights where you're crying yourself to sleep wondering, like, yo, am I going to make enough money this month to pay my bills? Like,
oh my like, gosh.
Am I going to be able to pay my student loans off ever? Like, I mean, God, is this your will for me to be passionate and poor? It cannot be. No, it cannot be, right? So you have to be rooted and know that you're gonna go through the journey, and that you might be emotionally labile, and just be okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's self-awareness. That's great advice. Having self-awareness and then, you know, knowing who you are, and then having people around you who know who you are. Yes, sometimes I think people, like you said, they see all the highs because typically that's what's posted, you know, the high moments. They think maybe, like one day I remember saying, maybe people think I'm just like sitting on my bed stacking, you know, $100 bills, you know, you know, but there's, you know, there's times when I've been very profitable. There's times when I've had those lows that you're talking about. And like you said, a calling, when you understand that you have a calling there, and there is a higher purpose, you can't do it in your strength alone.
Right.
And it sounds like you have your faith and you have the people around you for those moments. And that's your advice to others, is to understand that, because be ready if you're going to
be ready. Hello. If you're not ready right now, get ready. Cause this bro is not, look, it's not what Instagram says. It's not what Facebook says. Like, it's not even what these articles say. Like, we only give you a snapshot into the journey, and just understand that there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes for you to even see the highlight. Right.
Yeah.
People want the highlight without the work. And a lot of times that's rooted in, you know, our ego and our pride and, you know, wanting to be Instagram famous and wanting people to know who you are. And I think if you go into it wanting people to know who you are, you forget like why you're doing it, right? Your why can't be about you, because we're fickle. We're fickle people. Like, we're fickle. Yes. You know, what I want today might not be what I want tomorrow. What I want today might not be what I want in 10 years. But if you're rooted in something that's greater than you and a cause that's greater than you, regardless of how much you change and evolve, that mission, that why is constant, right? And you have something that you could work towards. So be prepared. Yes.
So this article, you mentioned article. So I want to talk a little bit about the Forbes Under 30 Fellow. Tell me about that. And how did you get to be listed as a Forbes Under 30? And how did you feel when they reached out to you to tell you that?
So Forbes, that opportunity really came out of nowhere. So For Forbes under 30, they have like list makers, the people who actually make the list, right? And then you have Forbes under 30 scholars. These are college students who are killing it, who are either entrepreneurs or they're creating, or intrapreneurs, right? They're creating projects within the confines of their universities and of their departments, and they're doing all these great initiatives. And then you have the Forbes under 30 fellows, which honestly was the first time they did it was last year in 2018. And so the fellows is basically entrepreneurs or change makers who were not quite ready to make the list yet, but we're on our way. And so they bring all these people together. You bring the list makers, you bring the scholars from the university, and you bring the fellows who are actually doing the work, and they're, you know, getting the skills that they need. They're building up their enterprises. And we all were able to attend the Forbes Under 30 Summit that happened in Boston last year. And it was such an amazing experience because I'm like sitting in rooms, and one of the sessions that I went to was, you know, how to raise your first $1 million. And I think that that session was a session that really opened my mind up to, yo, sis. There's people out here like doing things that I never imagined, right? And I think for me, it was important for me to be in that space because I wouldn't have been, I don't think I would have given myself permission to dream bigger, right? And so the great thing about the fellows was that a lot of us were like women and men of color. And so a lot of us, it was our first time being in these spaces where we're getting access to all this knowledge, like within industry, within fundraising, within startups, within technology. And you're able to, you know, converse with other entrepreneurs just like you who are struggling and figuring it out and really just trial and error. And it's like you try. And it's like, all right, this didn't work. And it's like, oh, this works. We're going to go with this, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of learning about that journey. But the beautiful thing about the Forbes Under 30 Summit for me, again, was that it gave me permission to dream big. It's like, why can't I also, you know, raise $1 million? But it also challenged me to step outside of social impact. And before I went to the Forbes Under 30 Summit, I didn't think that that was an option for me, right? I feel like a lot of times as people of color, we feel like there's this responsibility that we have to give back to our community, right? And that we have to give back to our community via nonprofit usually. And the Forbes Under 30 Summit for me kind of opened my eyes to other options. Like, you know, why can't we be a for-profit with a really nice corporate social responsibility project, or have a very profitable for-profit organization, and we create a foundation where we control what we invest in, right? And so I think a lot of times for people of color, we need to be mindful that there's so many different ways to make an impact, and that we don't always have to do it in a traditional nonprofit way, because that's the way that we know, but that we can be innovative and problem solvers, and we can be creative in the solutions that we provide to the problems that our communities are dealing with. And so I think that Forbes Under 30 Summit really just, you know, opened my eyes to things that I never thought that I would be exposed to. It's allowed me to dream bigger, and to think bigger. And I think I got from the Forbes Summit, and I just started having all these crazy ideas. Like, I hit up my co-founder, like, yo, we should start this software company that does, et cetera. And like, we don't have no software background, but it's like just giving yourself permission to dream that big, that even if I don't necessarily have the skill set to do it, can I rally the people around me who could do it, right? So it's just looking at problems in different ways and figuring out how to solve those problems. I think that was the biggest thing. Like, look, why do I need to be a six-figure business? Why can't I be a million-dollar business? Like, why do I only have to be limited to healthcare as an OT? Like, what if I wanted to go and, you know, make an impact in the beauty world? Or what if I wanted to go into a skincare line? Or what if I wanted to, you know, start selling bundles of weave? Like, we can do it all. Like, why do I need to be limited to just OT? What if I want to start a tech company? Like, it just kind of opened me up to anything. that people are making millions doing everything.
Like, they are. It's everything. So true. And I'm glad you had that experience. We were talking about, you know, the struggle and we were just trying to figure it out. But when you're around people who have a different mindset, it does change things. Because I thought, you know, I feel like I do a lot of different things, but the thinking was small. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you're like, why do you have to be a six figure? Why can't you be a seven figure? And it wasn't until I got an advisory board with people who were multimillionaires. Mm-hmm. And I just realized we think so differently, and it made a huge impact on not only the profit margin, but just, like you said, giving yourself that permission to have no boundaries. Mm-hmm. And understand that for profit, like you said, you can create a for profit and have a foundation, and have more control over where those profits go and how they provide impact. So it's great that you had that opportunity to be around those people in that room. And you said the majority were people of color. That is awesome. What's next for you, Robin? What goals do you have?
You know, so I turned 30 in a couple of days, and in my mind, I don't know why we put so much pressure on ourselves, but I thought by 30 that I was just going to have life all the way figured out. And now I'm like, who did my 15-year-old self think that I was? Like, who did I think that I was? So right now is a very exciting time. So again, we just, launched our second annual Stroke Community Reintegration Program, and we have partnered with the Shea Osudoku District, which is in Dudowa, Ghana, which is outside of Accra, outside the capital. And this year has been interesting because every time we do the stroke program, last year we were basically like, you know, can you give us an empty space, and we're going to convert this empty space into a therapy clinic and provide our services. And most times people give us an empty space. This year, we got a space that was an old pharmacy warehouse, meaning that it was filled with stuff, a lot of stuff, right?
Okay.
And so the district director was like, look, we don't have the empty space. We have this warehouse that we think can be a space for community occupational therapy services. However, for you to be able to do your script program, you have to clear out this space. And I was looking at him like, sir, I did not come to Ghana to clear out this space. Like, I came to just do this project in a space that's already clear, right? And mm-hmm. I think it's been a wonderful journey in that we've transformed this pharmacy warehouse now into a functional space where we're providing therapy services, or providing OT and PT and nursing services to stroke survivors, really following a community-based model. And I guess I just never realized how important having a space that was our own. Our mm-hmm. own, meaning that was a space specifically for occupational therapists to dream, to create, to provide services on our terms and not really be limited by, you know, a department chair or space, that it's a space that we can create. And that mm-hmm. instead of, you know, another profession like PT giving us a corner, we're saying, you know what, PT, we're going to invite you into our space, but this is a really occupational therapy space. And we're going to be able to do, like, you know, more IADL things like cooking and more interactive things like group support, setting up support groups and group activities and community reintegration things. But having this space has just really opened our mind up to so many different things. And so we've converted the space, and right now we just hired a new director, Daniela, who, you know, I have to say thank you to her, because she reminded me of who the 2016 Robin was when I started Go Therapy. And I think over the years I've kind of gotten away from that because I've been disappointed and you know, things haven't gone my way, and the process has been very long and has been very trying, because we're creating something that hasn't been created, meaning that, you know, we're taking all the L's for everybody who's coming behind us. And so we're very excited that we are going to convert this space, and it's going to be the first community occupational therapy center in Ghana. Wow. And we're excited because it's going to be, you know, the model for, you know, what community-based services can look like on the continent. And so right now, actually today, we're going live on a campaign to start raising funds to be able to convert this space. So it costs about $8,000 to renovate the space. So right now, because it's a warehouse, there's a few structural damages that we need to fix. We need to, you know, add washrooms, electricity, plumbing, a garden, like, you know, be able to really beautify the space so that it's functional, that it's safe, and that it's sustainable for years to come. And so just in the short amount of time that we've done the conversion of the warehouse, we have completed over 150 treatment sessions to our stroke survivors so far. And so it's working. The community is very receptive to the work that we're doing. And I'm just very thankful that, you know, that there was a community-based OT who in Ghana who was like, no, I really want to work in the community. I don't want to follow the medical model. I want to meet my patients where they are. Like, I want to create interventions and programs that is speaking to the things that they really want to do and not them coming in and doing, you know, therapeutic exercises. But these people are saying that they want to get back into the community. They want to be able to go to church. They want to participate in praise and worship. They want to be able to cook their own meals. They want to be able to go on field trips and do different things, right? And us being able to create an environment for them to live their life and live it to the fullest, right? To be able to engage in activities that are meaningful and purposeful to them, where they are. And so the prayer is that this, the Shea Osudoko Community Occupational Therapy Center will be that place for that. And it's the, you know, the new home to Go Therapy. So it's a very exciting time for Go Therapy. And I'm just really thankful that we've been able to get to this point in our journey, this early in our journey, because I do think it's a little bit early. Granted, you know, OT just started in Ghana. The first graduates graduated in 2016. And so imagine a short amount of time in 3 years that we've been able to get to this point where we're trying to figure out, like, okay, if we can't get into the medical, if we can't get into the medical model, right? If we can't get our clinicians into the hospitals and, you know, into outpatient clinics, where can we put them? And Ghana has a really robust community-based outreach program that include community-based nurses. And it's like, well, what if we just infiltrate into this model that's already here and we show our value in the community versus trying to, you know, convince people that we need to be in the hospitals. It's like, all right, if you're not giving us a space in the hospital, then okay, that's fine. You will meet us out in the community doing great work. And one of my favorite quotes is from Shirley Chisholm, where it says, if I don't have a seat at the table, I bring a folding chair. And I think that's kind of that's like the model for OTs in Ghana. Is like, look, we're walking around with folding chairs. We will stop and sit anywhere. If you're not giving us a seat, like if enough of us sit down, we'll create our own table, right? So
Right. Well, congratulations. That is quite an accomplishment in a short period of time. And I was going to ask, how can we support you? And it sounds like you answered that question when you said you're getting ready to go live to raise this $8,000. What platform will you be going live on, and how can our listeners donate to support this this effort?
Yeah, so we're using CrowdRise. And I can send you this link as well. It's www.crowdrise.com/communityOT center. And it will bring up the story of us transforming this space, and about a really special young lady who we have the pleasure of working with. Her name is Celestina. She is a 30-year-old stroke survivor and a mother too. And, you know, she heard the announcement about us providing therapy services to stroke survivors, and she came in. Essentially, she's like, look, I have two young children. I'm 30. I need to be able to regain as much function as possible so that I could be able to care for myself and my children. And so she's committed, and we're committed, and we're like, look, Celestina, girl, we're in this thing for the long run, and we're going to get you to a place where you're functional, where you're happy, and where you're really living life to the fullest. And so this honestly is for people like Celestina, who we are their last option, right? They've tried, you know, traditional medicine. They, you know, sometimes the intervention for stroke patients is doing nothing at all because they don't even know where to start. They don't even know where to go. They just kind of live with their impairments. And this is kind of like, this is just how I am. And, you know, in situations like this, you know, depression comes up and suicidal ideations. And so some, for a lot of our survivors, it's like, we are their only option. And it's like, all right, if you're the only option, we're going to be ambassadors for OT and PT. And they've told all their friends and family members, like, we had someone come in who was like, I heard that there, that this was a place that you guys are helping stroke survivors and you're fixing people. And he was like, the translation was, I want to be fixed. And we were like, well, have you had a stroke? And he was like, no. He was like, no. But, you know, we took his blood pressure and, you know, his blood pressure was like 200s over 100. And so, again, that there's a space now where we can do a lot of health promotion and health prevention. And we're talking to people about, you know, the symptoms and the risk factors of stroke, which is hypertension. And we're able to speak to them in a space that's not so medical where they're like, I'm never going to come back here. And we have systems in place where it's like, you know, uncle or grandma or auntie, we need you to go to the hospital. We need you to see the doctor. And then once you, you know, get on your medication, you get your insurance card situated, then we want you to come back. And because it's community-based, we even have a physician assistant who comes in and evaluates our clients within the center. And it's like, it's a continuum of care. And that's the thing that, you know, a lot of developing countries don't have is a continuum of care. Like, we haven't created a system where there's a continuum. And so with this space right now, and it's such a short time, we're realizing that we're creating systems that make sense and that it's less work on our survivors where they're not taking so many taxis, they're not taking so many chochos, that they kind of get everything in-house in one space. And instead of them going to providers, providers are actually coming to them.
Great, great. Anything else that you would like the listeners to know? Any last words of wisdom? I love the quote about bringing the folding, the folding chair, making your space. But any last words of wisdom that you would like to share?
You know, I think at this point, you know, just don't stop. Don't give up. If you feel that you're called to do something, that you just got to do it. You just have to do it. Just, you know, don't give up. And I think, you know, there's always a message of don't give up, like, you know, keep hustling, keep trying. But I think my message now throughout my journey is don't give up, but take breaks, right? Take time to love on yourself. Take time to feed your soul. Take time to exercise and go to therapy if you need it. Like, to spend time with your friends that, you know, have balance. Have balance. Don't give up, but take rest breaks. Take rest breaks and understand that as a leader, your business, your enterprise is only as strong as you are, right? And that minding your business means minding your mental health. Minding your spiritual health, minding your emotional health, as well as minding your business and making sure that your business is profitable, or that you're raising enough funds, or that you're doing whatever it is your business is called to do, but that you really are the core of that thing, and that you need to be grounded and rooted and healthy. And so, yeah, my advice is like, you know, don't give up, but sis, take those rest breaks when you need to.
Don't give up and take breaks. You know, as you were speaking and we were doing this interview this morning, I just felt like I wanted to throw an offering at you, because I was like, this Robin is coming with a word. I mean, you have, you know, this gift of entrepreneurship, but also how you speak and inspire and encourage, I think is another gift. And so I'm looking forward to hearing from you in other platforms, and maybe even hearing you speak in person one day. So again, thank you so much for your time. I'm not going to throw an offer, but I am going to make a donation. So if you can send that link over, make sure that is, I'm going to share that on my platforms today, but also we'll include it in the description for this interview today. So that is our show for today, everyone. Don't forget to subscribe and please tell others about this podcast. I was really inspired today. I feel energized. I feel like, you know, I'm not going to stop but take breaks, like Robin said. So until next time, and thank you for listening.
Thank you.